I've been on a long road with the devil right beside me. Rising with the morning sun, it's a hunger that drives me. Oh Lord, set my soul, take my pain and turn it into gold. 'Cause all I know, all I know, all I know is champion. I can take a beating now.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Black Cloud Society. I am excited to be with you today. Actually, super excited about this episode because, as you know, we have talked about over the past couple episodes of an upcoming show where we're going to have a guest host. And today is that day, which I am wicked excited about. But before we get into that, a couple announcements that need to be made. First things first is, not sure if you're aware or not, but iTunes finally picked us up, so that's a good thing. And secondly, I was beyond blown out of the water when I discovered that the show has gone international. So big shout out to our listeners in Australia. Thanks for tuning in, guys. And I hope you continue to like the content and follow us on our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, which I'm still not real sure how to use. And then obviously you can always email me at blackcloudpodcast@gmail.com. You know, today's episode kind of strikes close to home for me because I've been in numerous situations where I have been involved in scenarios where scene safety has been called into question. You know, there's been a lot on the news lately and Facebook and other media platforms I follow that regarding an increase or a perceived increase in EMS providers getting attacked while on these scenes. And what I find surprising, even more than, you know, the number of public that are outraged, but our fellow EMS providers who are seemingly surprised at the fact that the job we do can get rather dangerous at times. Now, I know that on day one of EMT class, you know, scene safety and BSI are pounded into our heads at to the point where it's even a critical fail on the, you know, the registry skill sheets. But what if I told you I have a slightly differing opinion on the whole scene safety issue? Now, I know there are some rather strong opinions on this topic, and I know there may even be some that will blatantly disagree with or be upset by what's possibly going to be said on today's episode, but I hope you'll stay tuned as we host our very first guest on the show and listen in as we discuss three tips to make sure everyone goes home. It's a struggle that reminds me. So heaven don't feel me now. Put the wings upon my feet. Our guest today has 20 plus years of practice in EMS, worked private 911 / transfer service for a while, where he began his career in leadership, led a hospital-based paramedic program as their chief paramedic, and is currently an EMS manager for a larger 911 service. Originally, was the deputy chief of my previous agency. That's where he and I first met. But then shortly thereafter, I ended up getting promoted to a member of command staff. And then we became colleagues and worked on a few projects together. Realized we were kind of kindred spirits, and since then have become good friends. He's not only what I consider a true friend and mentor, but one of the few providers in what I call my Black Cloud Council that I can go to and kind of bounce things off of, whether it be job-related or even personal-related. Wicked excited to welcome to the show Charles Wrigley Bynum. Welcome to the show, brother. It is great to have you on, and as our very first guest, no less.
thank you very much. It's a privilege to be here. And as you said, being your first guest is even that much more of a privilege. So I'm honored.
Man,
I'm
wicked excited about this show. We have been talking about this for a little while, and seemed like for a little while it was going to take forever to get it done, but I'm glad we're able to actually work out our schedules and sit down and get this done. I know you've been following the show and have, you know what it stands for, the vision and of, you know, influencing the current culture of EMS and consistently improving ourselves and growing from, you know, past experiences and basically just the pursuit of excellence. A few episodes ago, which was a difficult one for me to produce, we talked about surviving the shadows and the origin of those shadows and how constant exposure to chronic stress only compounds those shadows. But I got to thinking about another aspect of the chronic stress that, you know, few ever talk about, and that's the unmentioned stress of consistently wondering whether, you know, literally or subconsciously, about whether the fact that that next call we're about to go on, that next scene that we're about to step on, very well possibly could be our last, you know, whether that be some career-ending injury that removes our ability to provide for our families, or whether it be the literal sense of not going home due to a line-of-duty death, that stressor is always there, only adding to everything else that goes on along with in the life of public safety. I mean, we all talk about, you know, scene safety and BSI and how they're the building blocks of, you know, the very foundation of EMT school, but I know that you share this belief, but it's my personal belief that there is no such thing as a truly 100% safe scene, whether it be road hazards, chemical spills, extrication hazards, or you know, a violent encounter at the scene. We got to constantly have that vigilant mentality that anything can happen at any time and that it probably will. You know, I hear the argument many times that, you know, the states, we don't go in until the police have cleared the scene. You know, I'm sure you've heard that too, but there's a large demographic in this country that doesn't necessarily have the luxury of having the police department respond to everything that we're dispatched to. The system I currently work in, you know, doesn't have individual localized town police. They have the state police, and each county has their own barracks. And right now, my entire county only has 4 police officers at any given time, and the county is, you know, 30 something square miles. So for them to be dispatched on every single thing we go to is number one, not possible, but it's also quite inconvenient. But furthermore, I've personally had incidents on scenes where the police were present and things went horribly south. You know, it's my belief that if you are relying on somebody else to maintain a safe scene, then you're already behind the eight ball, that only you can, you know, maintain a 100% safe scene. When I first got started in this, it was actually my first exposure to some type of violent incident on the scene. The police were already there. You know, the police had, it was a shooting. The PD had already supposedly surrounded, or I should say, set up a perimeter around the area. So it was supposedly a secure scene. And we're working this patient who had just been shot in the middle of the street, and some random dude runs out and breaks through the crowd, saying that, you know, that's my brother type situation, and walks over to us, you know, unobstructed by the PD, pulls out his pistol and finishes this guy right in the street in front of us, and then takes off. So like, that was like, I was like, what in the, like, seriously, did this, I was beyond like, what just happened? This was a really ridiculous situation to be in. The PD was here. They were supposed to secure the scene. And I mean, he took off running after that. But just the fact that, you know, we had that false sense of security just because the police department had already supposedly secured the scene. So, again, that further proves my point that just because someone else is there doesn't necessarily mean that your scene is safe. I mean, there have been numerous times where I personally have been attacked in the back of the ambulance, or, you know, or even on scenes, you know, regardless of how many resources are there. In fact, you and I have actually been on a handful of those scenes together.
Yeah, Rich, I'd like to kind of move back a little bit to a point you just made about agencies having the luxury of the police available to respond, and not only available to respond, but also a lot of times be there when you, before you get there. So, and have that quote unquote secure the scene. I mean, personally, I have been fortunate enough and even fortunate enough to work with you in these services to have the great police departments that we work with. But I do kind of want to go back to a call you and I had, that was a while ago now, but got called for an unresponsive ETOH patient. And he wasn't really one of the frequent flyers that we're normally used to having, but we found him unresponsive on the floor, kind of shaking him a little bit. He'd come around, you know, do the nonchalant swinging at you a little bit because he just disturbed his slumber. But and eventually we were able to convince him to get up on a stair chair so we could carry him out because he was too intoxicated to walk on his own safely down a flight of stairs.
I remember this guy. We thought he was incapable of carrying him down, of walking down the stairs.
Yeah. You know, it just kind of goes back to, you never know what you're in for. So we get him on the stair chair, and as soon as we put the first chest strap around him, he decided he did not any longer want to be with us, and he jumped up and started swinging. And, you know, in this call, for some reason, we had, I believe, two or three police officers already there in the same room with us. So they immediately jumped in, and, you know, we were just kind of stuck in the middle. If you remember correctly, we really had no place to go. So,
he found, there was no place to go. We absolutely trashed.
Clearly we had no place to go because, you know, his door ended up getting broken in half. We ended up on the bed struggling with him. And I remember the police officer being on top of me, yelling taser, taser, taser. And I'm saying, please don't, please don't. I imagine that I'd be the unfortunate victim of that. But he kept reaching towards his pillow and trying to reach towards a certain area that he was determined to get to. And after the police were successful in restraining him, we found a, I believe it was a screwdriver or some sort of bar or some sort of tool over there that, you know, come to find out he was trying to reach for it to use against us. But, you know, after all is said and done, we cleaned up our mess. We also found that a knife had kind of somehow mysteriously appeared in the close proximity to where he was also. So that was really kind of an eye-opening event for, you know, for anyone that was new or even us who had been doing this for a little while that, holy cow, we could have just, you know, got really hurt.
Right. And even kind of further proves the point we had just made that regardless of how many resources are on scene, you're truly never 100% safe and that you're literally just 1 second away from something going south at any given time. do you remember that that guy on the highway that ended up following us or to the gas pumps from, I forget where we were coming back from.
Yeah, I think back from the hospital. We were just returning from dropping a patient off to one of the out-of-town hospitals. I remember that guy like it was yesterday, really. We were driving back on the highway, and all of a sudden we noticed this guy kind of acting weird and driving up on us, staring at us in the window, and then kind of slowing down to get behind us. And once we realized he was following us, if you remember, we were doing the kind of, you know, lane changes to make sure that, yeah, this guy is following us, or if it just happened to be a, you know, a coincidence that he was just driving erratically. But I mean, I think 15, 20 miles, the guy followed us, and we took back roads to the gas pumps. And once we figured out that he was definitely on our tail for some reason, I remember we called dispatch and called the police department to have them meet us at the fuel pumps. Cause I mean, who knows what this guy was, wanted our attention for, but yeah.
Right. I still think part of that was my fault, because once we realized that he was actually following us and we kind of slowed down and did that whole eye contact thing to see him. And if you remember correctly, he was actually videotaping us with a cell phone, and me being me, like looked at him, blew him a kiss, and started waving at him. And so I still think I kind of, you know, facilitated him following us all the way back to the pumps. But regardless, you still don't know what someone's intention is, you know, to follow us as long as he did to the town pumps. Like, did he want the narcotics? Did he, you know, was he going to rob us for our drugs? Like, you just never know what some of these people.
I mean, you know, you get the usual, like, citizens that you upset for whatever reason, or that they're having a bad day, that they might be a little aggressive when it comes to driving, but they usually back off and go about their day. But yeah, this guy followed us for, I want to say, close to 15 miles.
And then By the time PD got there, you and I had already handled it because we had determined the fact that, you know, we kind of want to be proactive about this. And if I remember correctly, we kind of hopped out and actually approached this guy to find out what his problem was. Was that, like, looking back on it, was that the smartest decision we ever made? I don't know. But just the fact that, you know, are we going to sit here and wait to be attacked, or are we going to proactively prevent this from happening? You know, that was my mentality.
I agreed. I think at one point, I think we kind of just said, like, well, what if this guy has a true medical emergency that he's trying to get a hold of us for? But, you know, we both knew that, you know, likely wasn't the case, because he would have tried other tactics to try and pull us over or, you know, call 911. But you're like a sitting duck. So, yeah, I think we were trying to be proactive in that aspect. So
on the topic of scene safety, I know we're kind of going on this whole thing that regardless of how many resources are there, anything can happen anytime. How do you feel about the mentality of, you know, I've heard some people say that if the scene is unsafe, I'm not going in. How do you feel about that mentality? My personal feeling is that obviously there's some situations where we know ahead of time, you know what, that's a potentially unsafe scene. I'm going to wait to see what happens. But my rebuttal to that point is, what about the scenes that you realize once you're in, already established patient contacts, establishing patient care, that you realize something's about to pop off? What do I do? Do I now leave my patient? What do I need to do? Like, for example, like I said, in the district I'm working in now, doesn't have the luxury of the PD even responding to, you know, the scene. Matter of fact, the fire department rarely even goes, because they don't really go to medicals unless it's an MVA that requires extraction. So a lot of the times at the ground service that I work at part-time, it'll just be myself and my partner, and we'll go walking into these scenes for a medical or whatever it is, only to find out that we're walking right into the middle of a domestic dispute. So what's your opinion on what to do next as far as that? I've already established patient care. Am I allowed to cease patient care, to leave the situation, or does that now open me up to potential negligence?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a great point. And, the educator in us always says to the students and to the people that you're mentoring, if the scene ever becomes unsafe, your safety is the priority and that of your crew. So, you know, how do you tell somebody that statement and then say, you know, you still have a patient in front of you? So it's definitely a rock and a hard spot that you're between. While your safety is most paramount, you still have a patient to deal with. It's the on scene kind of moment that you have to decide.
Yep.
Am I going to stay here with the patient, or am I going to protect myself and leave?
Right.
I guess that's what I'm trying to.
And I think that's where having a good relationship with your partner comes in, because ideally speaking, you know, you should be able to have that ability to communicate with each other without really even talking, just looking at each other, making the eye contact, knowing that something's about to go down, and maybe having one person kind of interject and kind of de-escalate the spouse while one continues patient care, and, you know, or and vice versa. But at the end of the day, if something were to pop off, I don't want to assume how you feel about the situation, but I know other people I've had this discussion with as far as physical contact, actually throwing down with someone on the scene. And I've heard some, you know, arguments that say that I'm not going to do that because then I'll get sued and I'll lose my livelihood and inability to pay my bills and whatnot. But it's my opinion that if my life is in danger, and the only alternative I have of leaving that scene is to throw down, guess what? I'm not going to need to have to worry about my livelihood of paying my bills if I ended up getting killed on a scene, you know? So at the end of the day, regardless of the patient care that's going on, if I am in danger or feel as though I'm in danger, I have no qualms about putting somebody down if I need to. Obviously reasonable and necessary, but that being said, I'm going home regardless of, you know, whatever those consequences might be.
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I mean, my safety is obviously paramount to me and my crew. But like you said, I mean, if you're fortunate enough to have a constant partner, those nonverbal communication skills just fine tune every day that you work. So de-escalation is certainly a part of what we should be educated to, and as educators trying to figure out the right curriculum to do that, because that is a skill I think that is not taught and really should be, especially in today's day and age. And then not even to go on the tangent of, you know, possibly being recorded and making sure you're appropriate that way so you don't get in any jams up that way. But yeah, I mean, for sure, if I'm put in a position where I need to go home, then I'm certainly going to do that.
Especially with considering, you know, considering the amount of mental health issues there are, considering the amount of drug issues there are, the ETOH, the, like, I'm sorry, there is no way to verbally de-escalate someone who's tripping on bath salts. It's just not going to happen. And these guys that are, you know, they're on bath salts, that are on all these other substances, they got like ridiculous superhuman strength. And yeah, everybody's like, oh, we'll use, you know, sedate them with chemical means. Okay, that's all fine and dandy. But now you have to physically restrain this person in order to get them still enough so that we can chemically restrain them. And wrestling somebody on scene is difficult enough. Wrestling somebody on scene with a sharp in your hand is a whole different story.
Oh, 100%. I don't know if you were there with me or not, but there was a guy back when the bath salts were a really big thing, not a fan of it, not now, but in the area that we worked, they became a big nuisance to us. Was the guy jumped out the second story window, broke his leg, and was still running down the street on his broken leg. So he had to be restrained, obviously. And eventually we were able to chemically restrain him, but it didn't really work that well because he was just so hyped up.
That actually kind of makes me, that you said broke his leg, maybe for some reason think about what, I'm trying to think of who I was with. I can't remember who I don't think it was you, but it's a very similar situation. This guy was ETOH, was actually a bilateral lower amputee, and got so agitated to the point where he actually removed one of his prosthetic legs and was attempting to use it as a baseball bat against us. So this dude ripped off one of his legs and is swinging the thing at us. So, you know, it just as far as number one, don't underestimate the fact that there's other extra resources on scene. Second of all, don't underestimate the fact that, you know, this patient may appear to be minimally responsive or no threat to you. But that's, in my opinion, when is the highest instance of, you know, the potential to get hurt.
I was going to say, you know, it just reminds me of these stories that you hear nationwide, of course, but the elderly female or elderly male who calls for chest pain, and then all of a sudden responders walk in and they're facing the barrel of a gun. So, you know, you never really know. I mean, you're thinking you're going to an elderly person or a person for an actual true medical complaint, and, you know, they're walking into a lion's den.
Yeah, I actually had a very similar situation to that, which I didn't even recall until you just mentioned that. But way back when, we're probably going 10, 11 years now, before I'd even met you, I was working in a inner city agency, and we got dispatched to what we were told was a pediatric shortness of breath. So, you know, standard, typical, everyday medical call, the police department isn't even going to bother. You know, there's no threat based off their CAD dispatching triage abilities, if you want to call it that. But so my partner and I go walking in, and the dad, you know, is directing us upstairs, seemingly unfazed. And we go walking upstairs, and the kid's dead. The father had literally just blew his kid away with a shotgun. And so now we're sitting there in this house with the guy who had just murdered his own kid and wanted us to keep him alive. Like, this, the stuff that you number one, don't think about, the stuff that you're not physically, mentally prepared for. Like, I even remember another one where we went into a house for an old guy. He ended up being an old Vietnam vet. And this guy, you know, was a psyche eval. Come to find out, he's an old Vietnam vet, and he's hiding under his kitchen table, you know, thinking the VC are coming after him. But he had his whole house rigged with booby traps. He had in his bedroom, his bedroom door was rigged so that if you open it, it's tied to a double barrel shotgun. So if you open the door, it's going to blow away whoever opened it. His whole house was just rigged with these booby traps. And is looking back on it now, I think that I got myself into some stupid situations. But at the end of the day, the take home lessons that I have brought back from those situations, in my opinion, is irreplaceable. So, speaking of lessons, what do you think? We entitled to the show, you know, three tips to ensure everyone goes home. What would you say, as our very first guest, is your very first take home tip to make sure that everyone goes home?
So I personally agree that, or feel that our safety as, you know, myself and my crew member, like I said before, is my number one priority. And I kind of steal this away from the flight world, but the whole two to go and one to stay theory. If somebody doesn't feel right about something, don't discourage that. Don't discount that. There's subtle things that, as you alluded to before, that you see now that you wouldn't have paid attention to had it not been for your previous experiences. And everybody has their own experiences. So if somebody sees something that doesn't seem like it's doesn't seem right, it likely it's not. So I that's my number one thing I believe is the key to our safety as a crew members.
Yeah, I like how you pointed out that you kind of grabbed that from, you know, the flight world and that whole two to go, one to stay thing. We do utilize that rule, you know, three to go, one to know. So if at any given time, you know, we feel as though the mission's unsafe, whether it be, you know, whether it be for weather, whether it be for anything, you know, it takes all three of us, the pilot, myself, my nurse partner, to all agree that, that yes, we are going, we're going to complete this call, whether it's a scene, whether it's in a facility, whatever. But at any given, we could be halfway there to the scene. You know what? If one person, something doesn't feel right, then we all turn around, we all go home. Because at the end of the day, all three of us are going home. And as you said, the same should correlate for the ground crew. Both myself and my partner should be on the same page at all times. You know, and that kind of, you made mention something early before, if you have something, I believe you said something to the effect that if you have the luxury of working with, you know, the same partner and establishing that communication. I don't care if you like me. I don't care if I like you. At the base, we don't even have to see each other. However, if we're on the truck, guess what? I expect you to have my back just as much as you're expected, you know, as I'm expected to have yours. I don't care who you are. I don't care your experience level. I don't care if you and I just got into a huge argument at the base. You know what? When those tones drop and we're headed to the scene, literally, my life is in your hands and your life is in mine. And that should be the only thing that matters, regardless of whether it is bad blood or not. So again, that whole communication thing. Yeah. Is it nice to have that established partner? You have the same partner every day type situation, where you can, you know, you form a relationship and you become friends and you know, at some point, sometimes you even become like family. But for those of us that only work the ground on a per diem basis, sometimes we just get, you know, partner of the day, partner. We just could get a partner we haven't even met before. And now we're expected to go into these scenes together and take care of each other. So 100% must be on the same page. If one of us doesn't like it, then it should correlate just like it does in the flight world that guess what, that we're going to have to do something to either come up with an agreement as to what the situation is, or we're not going to do it. So very, very good point with the two to go, one to say. So what would you say your second take home tip is to make sure everyone goes home?
So my second point, I think, is don't underestimate anyone for any reason. You brought up the point of the gentleman using his prosthetic leg as a baseball bat. I've actually personally had a prosthetic leg thrown at me. And you just never really know what you're walking into until you get there and either everything goes well or the tides change and you're suddenly faced with whether it's a verbally abusive person or, you know, worst case, a physically abusive person.
Right. And as far as don't underestimate anyone for any reason really, really resonates with me, because I used to get, you know, I used to get busted all the time and get made fun of because I carried what became known as the black gloves with me all the time. And that wasn't necessarily for the patients that would throw down, because occasionally, yeah, it would happen in there to protect me. But I mean, if something pops off, you know, quick, you're not going to have time to put the gloves on. I first started carrying these gloves when I first learned the lesson that you can't necessarily, and again, nothing against our brothers in blue, but you can't necessarily trust the police officer to secure the scene. There have been numerous times, and I'm sure everyone has had this opportunity or this situation where you get on scene for, you know, the psych eval or the ETOH or whatever. And it's, you know what, if you don't go to the hospital, you're going to jail. Okay, well, of course, they're going to choose the hospital because nobody wants to spend the weekend in jail. So they just throw this patient in the back of the truck with us. So I got to the point where I didn't think that was cool. So if, you know, they had just had an interaction with the police department, before you get into my truck, from that type of situation. I'm searching you. I'm making sure you don't have any knives on you, no guns on you, no needles, nothing like that. Nothing that's going to, number one, hurt me on the way to the hospital, but furthermore, that has the potential to hurt the hospital staff once they get to the ER. So I personally took into practice that anytime we were met with the situation where, you know, it's at the hospital or it's jail, then guess what? I'm going to physically search you to make sure that my environment is safe. And while I, you know, initially I did, you know, get made fun of quite a bit for that, quite, you know, shortly thereafter, a whole lot of people started carrying black gloves of their own.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm one of those same people. You know, the risk of being stuck with a needle as you're, you know, quote unquote, patting somebody down. Nobody wants to take that risk. So I did get the black gloves and had the fingertip protectors on there. So if we did come across a needle, it wasn't going to, well, it would have a less risk of puncturing us and exposing us to any other communicable diseases.
All right. So with all that being said, what would you say is your third and final point or tip, I should say, to ensure that everybody has a very good chance of going home?
Yeah, so obviously, as you know, there's millions of tips that you can take away from each experience, but I think the most important one, and I kind of left it for last, and I actually just kind of added it in last second, but complacency will get you. The fact that your frequent flyers or, you know, your resident ETOHs, each time that you interact with them, you know, 100 times, they could be super nice and, you know, cooperative, but it's that one last time that you just don't know. So walking into a scene and just assuming that, you know, John Doe is going to be friendly like he always is not a good attitude to have walking into any call, let alone somebody who's intoxicated or has any other mind-altering substances on board.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more about the complacency thing, man. I believe it was second or third episode we put out way back. Seems like way back when, but reality was only a few months ago. But one of the first few episodes that we put out, you know, we talked about the three toxins that are killing your agency and your people, and one of those was complacency. And what, you know, complacency will 100% kill you, whether it's complacency in, you know, on the scene, as far as, like you said, underestimating somebody, whether it's complacency on, you know, an MVA. Yeah, okay. We all hate wearing our high vis vest because we feel like we look like idiots. But the minute you don't put that vest on is the minute you get clipped by a car and you end up dying. So 100% complacency will kill you, regardless of what the situation is. If you're not wearing your PPE, you know, on a pin job, you know, and you put your hand in the wrong place and get it stuck between the jaws or something like that. We could probably talk about complacency and do a whole episode on complacency all day long. But in regards to the three points that you just gave us, or your three take-home points and tips and tricks for making sure everyone goes home, what would you say, what brought you to those points? What was a pivotal moment or a patient or a particular scene that changed your course or changed the very way in which you practiced these points?
So it was a long time ago. I believe I had just gotten my EMT license shortly thereafter. So somewhere around the year 2000, excuse me, I was, again, fairly new to having my EMT license. We get called to a person with, I believe it was just an ill female or maybe abdominal pain or something like that. But as we were talking to her, she was laying in bed. And as we got to get her up out of bed, she reached under her pillow and started waving a knife around. Now, as you said before, one of these low risk scene safety calls, or potentially low risk scene safety calls, the PD wasn't even dispatched to this call just because it was an abdominal pain. So I tested out the theory of the panic button on the radio, and it worked to a certain extent, you know, that naive new EMT hitting the panic button thinking that the whole world's going to be coming after us. But dispatch asked if we were okay or if it was an accident, and I kept the mic open.
Because usually it's an accident.
Yeah, well, exactly. Or somebody messing around. Yeah. But I kept the mic open because I didn't want to, you know, say too much. But I mean, she was loud and yelling, and dispatch got the hint and PD showed up shortly after. But this wasn't the scenario that you would expect this kind of thing to happen. It was a young female I say young, probably in the mid 20s, with abdominal pain. And all of a sudden we're face to face with the blade of a knife.
I've had a couple situations where knives have been involved as well, and they're just like probably some of the scariest moments, you know. You know, you could ever envision yourself in once you give it to that situation. But in regards to not necessarily just this particular topic of scene safety, maybe your entire career, what do you feel has been the most important lesson you've learned thus far? I mean, obviously, you know, we're going to be learning lessons as we grow as clinicians, as we grow as people. But thus far, from day one until day now, what do you think is the most important lesson you've picked up?
So personally, I think learning that sometimes all the people have to their name is the clothes on their back and or the stuff that's in their pockets. When there's a slight chance, or when they realize that there's a possibility of losing whatever they have, whether it's for 5 minutes or 2 hours while they go to the hospital, anytime there's a risk of someone losing everything they have, instinctively or naturally, we're going to fight for our belongings. We're going to fight for our life. And sometimes what a lot of us think is our entire life has a lot of monetary stuff, a lot of material stuff. But I think some of the biggest lessons I learned was just because, you know, we're fortunate enough to have more than a bottle of liquor and a jacket to our name, some people aren't. And if that's all they have, then they're going to fight for it. So if there's any chance that somebody's going to lose that, there's a chance that they're going to fight for it.
That's a good point. Like, I wish I'd known years ago that, you know, it's only going to escalate the situation when, you know, you reach into someone's pocket and you pour out their bottle of alcohol. Like, obviously we know they can't bring it to the ER with them. However, for them, they're already agitated. And what are we doing reaching into their pockets, taking their only belonging, what was their only possession at this point, and dumping it out on the sidewalk? Like, you were just asking to escalate the situation. And, you know, back in the day, I used to not care about that stuff and used to almost, you know, look forward to, you know, trying to get a little physical with patients and, you know, but the older I get, the more I realize that I don't recover quite as easily as I used to. but more importantly, you know, right, for real. But more importantly, the like you said, taking that lesson that that is legitimately the only thing they have. And a lot of times we can de-escalate that situation simply by just being better people and treating these people like they're actually humans instead of just like they're, you know, picking up so-and-so again, get in, you know, type situation. But so speaking of all the various lessons you've learned, you've been doing this, you know, a long time, as have I. You've even been doing it longer than I have. But as you know, part of the mission statement of this show, we focus a lot on leadership and a lot on mentorship. Passing on to people that are just coming up, what do you feel is, you know, one thing you wish you knew before you started? Let's put it that way. What's the one thing you wish you could have told yourself before you had started this career, and would it have changed your course?
Oh, sure. I realized pretty early on how unprepared and naive I was to just life in general. But then when you're getting called to people's worst moments, you realize that regardless of their socioeconomic status or how much money they have or what, you know, what kind of stuff they have or what kind of money they don't have, when you take all that stuff away, we're all human, and there's nothing material that bars us from having issues of mental health or drug or alcohol dependency, or just a general bad attitude towards not only law enforcement, but public safety in general. So on the mentorship side, as an EMS educator, we try to instill these real world problems and into scenarios when we're discussing patient care, so that students walk out of the class understanding, at least on a mental note, that it doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter. Nothing matters.
True. True. I mean, you're only the take home point for me is like you're only one bad decision away from being in that other person's shoes.
Of course. I mean, it's depending on how we handle situations as a whole, or our own mental health or our own issues, whether it's at home or at work or whatever, there's nothing to say that we're immune to walking down the same path that they are. And, you know, from being a provider to a potential patient in the future.
Yeah, actually, that's a really good point, because I know I'm not speaking for everyone, but I've had the experience of providing care or responding to a scene where that patient that is giving us a problem actually used to be a fellow provider. And most of the time, they're the ones that, you know, give us more problems than a lot of the other patients that we're transporting on a day-to-day basis. So we're rapidly approaching close to about 45 minutes. So you and I could literally talk about this all day long, because it's a topic that both you and I are rather passionate about, given our experiences. But as we close, what would you say is your final, like, if they take home anything out of today's episode, what would you want that to be?
So I think for me, bringing the point home of your safety is your responsibility. And while we say that, you know, your teammate or your crew member has your back, nobody can have your back like yourself. So take the time to reflect on any weaknesses you might have, or, you know, if you're not a very strong person, you know, I'm certainly not the poster child for this next statement, but, you know, go to the gym, improve yourself, make yourself, go to the gym and improve your physical fitness level. Take a self-defense class. There's plenty of them out there, any karate studio or any mixed martial arts studio. And not saying you're going to be Mr. Miyagi by any means, but have the ability to, you know, have the ability to take control of the first 30 seconds when something goes wrong, and be the one that's holding that person down and while you wait for your backup, versus being the one that's on the bottom. You know, we're focusing a lot on physical violence, but verbal violence is a big part of what we do also. So maybe taking a de-escalation class so you minimize your risk of things becoming physical. But I think, again, the take-home point that I'd like to everybody leave today with is your safety is your responsibility. And if you don't take responsibility for your own safety, then unfortunately, nobody else can 100%. So that's it.
Those are all awesome points, man. It's been great having you on the show, especially as our very first ever guest host. Hopefully have you on again here in a little while. We'll pick another topic and I'll have you on again. But thanks for your time. Thanks for coming on. It's been awesome having you on.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. I can't even tell you how excited this made me. I'm truly humbled and honored. Forgive me for my nervous jitters throughout this. But you're doing awesome work, man. Keep up the good work. Stay safe. And thank you again for having me. Again, it's been an honor and a privilege.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks. We'll talk to you later.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in this week, guys, as we talked about quite a few very good take-home points as far as maintaining both our safety, our partner safety, and the security of the scene in general. Until next time, guys, look out for yourselves, look out for each other, keep your boots polished, and your heads held high.
The views and opinions expressed in this production are in no way a substitution for your agency's policies, procedures, or guidelines. The content and ideas are that of Black Cloud Society, and in no way reflect the views and opinions of the employers of those involved with this production. We thank you for tuning in.